Nation with Who1.co.uk presents the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast number 154. I'm Adam, and with me this week, God help us, is Mr. East Barton.
This isn't going to be big on dignity.
Ah! Yes! Gotcha!
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Shame about the sick.
Mary Lang.
It's a tongue.
And a tongue? Is it? Thank you. And Robert Haynes.
Nobody talk to me. Nobody human has anything to say to me today.
All right, then. Goodbye. All right, goodbye, Robert.
Yes, and I have a complete desk of sound effects to play with today.
Uh-oh.
No. His new toy.
Including this old favourite. Oh, great. Right then. Welcome, everyone, to the show this week, where we will be looking at Doctor Who stuff, including The Beast Below. You mean it? Ooh. What's that mean? It?
No, we're actually talking about Doctor Who on a Doctor Who podcast. Who would have thought?
What?
It? Right, so, as we've only got Mary for 58 minutes, I think it might be a good idea to be quiet.
Oh. Maybe a winder.
Eh?
Yes.
Is he a winder now?
No, it's funny to say that. I'm sure I've got a sound effect for that somewhere. Oh, I just pressed the wrong button. You won't have heard that. Right, yes. I did have a tick tick one.
Bad boy.
Ooh.
I've got that one somewhere. Well, I'm not going to play it. Right then, so.
I've got Batman somewhere. What?
Never mind. Right, The Beast Below begins with a shot of some spaceship, looks like a bit like a city, a cross between a city, with a nice big Union flag on it. And we
oh, well, that was nice. Oh.
And also that all the towers on this spaceship have got the counties of Great Britain flashing on them in lights.
Surrey? I saw Surrey.
You don't have to apologise. We're in a classroom then. Interesting, the girl in the classroom, I think she's called Mandy, has the same school uniform as Isabella, apart from it doesn't say Cowes Primary School on the cardigan.
Several of the girls have that school uniform, but some of them don't.
Interesting thing, of course, is that the tie that Timmy's wearing is the old Cowes Primary School tie from when Alicia used to go there many years ago. Remember Alicia? She used to be on the show many yonks ago, but she's doing GCSEs. And
who are you talking about?
Never mind. Anyway, so yeah, everybody is good children apart from Timmy. Timmy's
By the way, Timmy. It was interesting of when they're calling the roll to have each of them, as each one stands in front of the smiler, one of the names was Alfie, and that happens to be the name of the actor who plays Timmy.
Ah,
cool.
Coincidence.
Meanwhile, the sort of smiling, sort of robot-y head turns as just to indicate... It
becomes a little less smiley.
Yeah. But it's only got...
What would you call that then? It's not a smiler anymore, so what would you call
Frowny?
It's a frowner.
Frowner?
But what annoyed me about this scene, when he's in the lift, right, and he's just about to plummet to wherever he's plummeting to, the girl on the test card is very annoying with her tongue sticking over her blooming gappy teeth. Irritating. But sinister.
What is annoying to me is that these... smilers seem to have three halves.
I was just about to say that, but you got in there ahead of me. I find them quite funny, actually.
Made more complicated later when the people, you know, when those other human-looking people turn into smilers.
Meanwhile, yes, like I say, he's supposed to have fallen down.
Meanwhile, back in the TARDIS.
Yeah, he's supposed to have fallen down some burning shaft.
Hanging outside of it, actually, with Amy.
And the very lucky doctor is looking up the Amy's 90. I'm going to have to rewind that bit.
As
because no wonder he's holding there for so long, because he's got a terrific view.
And smiling, oh, really smiling.
Yeah, not surprised. Dirty old doctor. Yeah, so that basically picks us up from that sort of extra clip we had from the previous episode of her sort of dangling in space. And then
meanwhile, back in TARDIS.
Then we have the 11th Doctor doing going around the TARDIS console, showing it off for the first time to us.
Yeah,
and the console.
So there's a bit of so basically the Doctor's talking all doctory stuff just for a sec while they observe the Mandy grizzling on the spaceship somewhere. Amy's watching it, and then the Doctor's suddenly there in shots, yes. And he waves at Amy to follow, but she's in a nightie, but doesn't bother her too much, even though she does mention it a couple of times.
She also mentions that she's been dead for years.
Yes, interesting. Bearing in mind she has been dead for years.
You're
a cheery one. Yeah, but so bearing in mind she has been dead for years, it's quite interesting, isn't it, looking back on it as we do now. The Doctor decides to put a glass on the floor.
There's an escaped fish in the area.
Yes. Yeah. I'm surprised nobody...
Jim, a fish.
Yeah, I was surprised nobody used that one, actually. There's an escaped fish in the area. Because
thought about it then, or remembered it then.
You did, okay, fair enough. The Doctor again sort of observes Mandy's grizzling, and then that bloke, the sinister bloke with the glasses, he was in some children's program playing. Oh, there was the headmaster or something like that. He played a sinister headmaster in a children's TV show around about the time this was on, actually.
Then so we see. Saying he's good at playing sinister, then.
Yeah, very good at playing sinister.
Is that Hawthorne guy?
Yeah.
That's Terence Hardiman. He was in Secret Army.
Yeah.
He was in what? Sorry,
he was
Robert?
In Secret Army. Oh, was he? One of the German officers.
Oh, yes, I can see him getting away with playing a German officer. Definitely. And then we see that a mysterious woman, who we obviously know to be Liz Ten, in a very, very long, velvety gown. And she's got lots of glasses on the floor as well.
Hmm.
Yeah, what a waste of... Good.
I've done that before and trodden on them.
That glasses. Wise.
Again, doesn't really surprise me.
What was that noise there?
What was what noise there?
A glass.
Sounded like something. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Anyway,
it's probably me eating my breakfast.
The Doctor notices the smiling robot-y faces. Also, I forgot to mention that he does tell Amy that they're just there to observe, not to interfere, because he never interferes in the affairs.
Unless?
Never?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
That was a Gilbert and Sullivan reference.
Okay. But he does look very... In fact, it's interesting.
Are crying.
Yeah. That's it. Well done, Mary. Well, the fact that this is only like 2-3 years ago, and now much younger they look in that short period of time. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
both Matt Smith and
Karen Gillan.
Four.
I got that wrong, didn't I? Karen Four.
Yeah, then they come to this sort of like a work area that says Magpie Electronics on it.
Yeah.
Which sort of threw a little bit of red herring into it, thinking that it might have something to do with the same, you know, might be like a sequel to that story.
The Idiot's Lantern.
Thank you for that. The Idiot's Lantern. I'll edit that bit in, of course.
Greatest, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it doesn't mean to say that he has to write all the stories in relation to...
No, I was just thinking it wasn't the same author, was it?
It was not, no. Oh, I've just clicked the wrong button then. What's happening there? I think I pressed skip instead of fast forward. So anyway, Amy goes and has a peek inside after getting through the padlock.
Of course, Amy, who doesn't wear any hairpins at all, pulls out this impossibly huge one to pick the lock with. You know,
that's what he said.
Aye.
I just wonder, where did she come up with that thing?
And then she runs into the 456 from Torchwood. I mean, the thing below.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the smiler looks particularly upset at this point. Anyway, it's more of a scorpion tail, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And like you say about the 4, it's not so much the 456. The end of the tail looks a bit rude, like the part of that monster that was in the Lazarus experiment. The end of its tail looks a bit, it's part of it. Remember they were saying it's supposed to look a bit like...
I didn't really look.
to tell you the truth.
I may have got that wrong. Maybe it was later on in the series.
Not in the lesser of the experiment, yeah.
Anyway, she sort of runs off because she sees this scorpion tail, looks a bit scared, and then gets squirted in the face by some steam. The doctor, meanwhile, is poking around, looking at glasses on the floor again, and then a strange woman with a mask appears.
Ooh. Making Star Wars references.
Yes, very Star Wars.
Yes.
You're our only hope.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But she does look really weird with the black woman's sort of eyes behind a white mask like that.
For a disguise, seeing that no one else in the ship wears a mask, she kind of stands out.
Yes.
But you still don't know who it is under there.
Well, we do, obviously, in hindsight. It's Liz 10, everybody. Spoilers. Warriors.
We do, but...
Ice Warriors.
Ice Warriors, yeah.
Shut up.
It's the new word for spoilers, isn't it? Ice Warriors.
She does agree.
I will destroy you, BBC.
She has to go about in disguise, so I would think she would be more noticed this way than if she just would, pull her hood up.
Indeed. Anyway, meanwhile, Amy sort of comes to in some little room with a TV on it.
Those TVs are pretty much the same TVs from the Idiot's Lantern.
Yeah, they're sort of like retro TVs, aren't they?
Props department.
Tell me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
You took all that time just to go and get that. God's sake.
It was worth it.
Anyway,
yes. I do notice that it is a unique thing to British shows about the future that instead of being futuristic, they tend to go retro with everything.
Yes, I know, but you do, don't you? I mean, nowadays you can get a retro thing that's sort of updated but looks retro. I'm sure they haven't. I'm surprised they haven't brought out TVs like that are more widescreen. Oh, I love those retro fridges.
Fridges, radios.
Yeah. And in fact, before I got married, the place where I lived, the chap had a sort of 1950s fridge. But there wasn't actually a remade one. It was actually genuinely a 1950s fridge. It was absolutely fantastic. How interesting.
I think Smegged away old-fashioned looking fridge.
Yes, I think it was one of those, that particular model that you just said. I thought it was something from Red Dwarf, but no, it was in fact the make of the fridge. But enough of the 20-megabyte fridge podcast. Back to this one. So basically, Amy's watching a sort of, like a party political broadcast in a way, explaining what's going on with the ship, with the Starship UK. And something happens and she ends up pressing the forget button.
Bit of a sudden decision, though, isn't it?
And then she forgets she's pressed the forget button. And
We don't know how long she was in there.
No, she could have gone off and had another adventure with the doctor, couldn't she?
And she does look very overwhelmed.
But she doesn't look any older, so hopefully it wasn't too long.
Well, how old did this say that she was?
I can't remember. You tell me.
Something like 1,300
years or something.
I'm pretty sure it's on Wikipedia somewhere.
It's in the subtitles. All I have to do is turn the subtitles on.
Okay. Pardon me. That was a real.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway, right. what was that? Sorry, that's me accidentally pressing the scratch button.
Quite appropriate, really.
Yeah, so she meets up. There's a message, isn't there, where she says, you must get the doctor off the spaceship, get him into the TARDIS. It's from Amy herself, but she watches doctor off the starship.
It's still playing when the doctor pokes his head in the cubicle,
which means he would have seen it.
Yeah, I think that he heard it, and he simply doesn't acknowledge it.
Yeah, he just ignores it. I suppose it makes
him
interesting.
Well, he does ask her, what have you done?
Yeah, but also I think it makes him more interested, more inclined to stay, the fact that he's seen it. And then anyway, they're in another little room and he presses the protest button and the sort of rotating head looks a little bit annoyed again. And they back away, the floor opens and we see that sort of shaft that the little boy fell down in the lift and they fall down it.
Could you tell me something? Did anybody think it looks a bit weird though? And for one thing, if you take a lift, it's really a box that goes up and down. So how can the bottom slide out like it does?
Right. So how can the floor slide out like it does, if it, you know, if you take a lift for what it is? And also, it doesn't look where they fall down. It sort of reminds me of The Empire Strikes Back when Luke falls down and then he gets in one of those little tubey things.
Are you talking about the bit in... in Empire Strikes. I was thinking about the original Star Wars film where they end up in that sort of garbage thing and the walls start crushing them.
Yeah.
But I do want to jump in here he does quickly go through the history of the Time Lord thing with Amy. I mean, very, very briefly. I'm surprised she's not more curious.
Yes.
Well, they do get put into a big beast smell. I can understand.
Yeah,
that.
Amy's 1306 in this.
Yeah, there you go.
And so what does that have to do?
One of the dogs has let one go.
Just tells you how many years ago it is since her timeline, sort of,
right,
isn't it? Or how many years this is set in the future.
Well, I'm just talking about how quickly he goes through the history, his Time Lord history with her.
Yes.
You know, it was a bad day, you know, and everybody died and that kind of thing. And she doesn't
In a way, I'm quite pleased they did that because I didn't want to sit through the same story again. But I'm glad they referred to it.
Dealing with the floor opening for this, that room isn't a lift, so it can open, the floor can open however you want. But that is a good question about the lift that Timmy was in.
Timmy. Anyway, we'd rather dodge the fact that they've landed on a tongue of the whale itself and they're covered in horrible stuff. And I quite like the fact they look out and you see the teeth and then you see the sick coming up.
Empire Strikes Back when they're escaping off that little asteroid.
Yeah, and also the fact... Geronimo is the comment, as we expect them to be shot out into space because where else would the vomit go? But they get sort of vomited up through some sort of, conveniently, up some sort of pipe. They all covered in sick and smell revolting and ugh.
Yeah. You assume so?
No, she sniffs herself.
I'm talking about in real life.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm sure it actually did stink on set when they were filming it on the tarpaulin or whatever they were on.
Yes. Yeah, probably not quite as bad as they're supposed to.
No.
Yeah, go on.
Oh, no.
And also, there's another reference later, I think, that Liz Ten's remarks about the sicky smell.
Nice hair, shame about the sick.
Yeah.
Yes. Which was the quote I was doing, except I didn't see anyone's hair, so...
Meanwhile, the doctor has a go at two of these rotating head robot thingamajigs, who then get out of their little things and start walking towards them. Yes. But they get saved by Cockney Liz Ten.
Queen, mate.
Do you know who she reminds me of? Sorry, I just
Liz Ten goes through the history of the Doctor too, through her own royal line.
do you know who this character, the characterization, reminds me of? It's like a cross between River Song and Rose, but more River. In fact, the character is so River-like. You're thinking, you know, it could be another regeneration of River.
Maybe?
Yeah, that's the phrase I was looking for. It would have been quite handy if they could have actually worked that into the story somewhere, and would have made sense as well in some ways.
Yes, the way she whips out those guns and blasts the Smileys, it's very River-like,
yeah. And I wouldn't put it past River sort of getting into the royal lineage somewhere along the line as well.
She was Cleopatra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, this particular ship left Earth in the 29th century due to solar flares. That's the exact same timing as the Ark in space.
Which I just watched on the weekend.
Do you reckon they knew that when they wrote it?
Yes.
Probably.
Of course.
Pretty sure he did, yes.
Yes. Cool. But they decided
those
not
smilers,
to. Yes?
I just like the line from the Doctor when they got a bit frowny. He said, "Now come on, that's not going to work on me. Now tell me what I want to know." And then they opened up and started chasing him. But it doesn't scare him that much until they start moving after them.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's what I referred to a little bit earlier, wasn't it? Anyway, they end up in the Queen's boudoir, and then the Doctor notices all the glasses on the floor. And then they basically find out that he knows that there's no engine in the ship, because that's why he's put the glasses on the floor. So I think they've deciphered now that something, it's being powered by something organic rather than electronic mechanical. Mechanical, that's the word I was looking for. There's something about the mask, the Queen's mask, that is moulded precisely to her face, because later on we find out that she thinks she's been reigning for 10 years when she's actually been reigning for about 300 years, but she keeps on pressing the forget button.
Wait. Back bit, when the doctor was with Amy in that cubicle.
Yes.
I believe that was the first time that Amy realized he was an alien, and they had a repeat of the same thing, the same conversation that the doctor had with Lady Christina. You look human. You look Time Lord.
Mm. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like that. Thank you for that. I've forgotten about that.
Well, it is a good comeback.
Yeah. Anyway, they've gone down into the sort of the I suppose what they call it, the Tower of London. That's what it was. Where we discover that there's some laser thing, basically torturing the whale's brain. It's being fired.
That reminded me of Planet of the Ood.
Yeah, I suppose it is a bit. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
The doctor's not
actually,
particularly happy with this.
That's the same. They're beneath a abbey where it's the same place where in Vincent and the Doctor they battled the monster in the crypt. And also it's
that's
Rebel
up.
Flesh and Almost Rebel Flesh and Almost People. It's the interior of the monastery, and it's also the Power of Three's unit laboratory.
Thank you for that, Kirby.
Thank goodness it went too many.
Yeah. Oh, you don't want to know about the main street there with
No, I don't. You're right, I don't. You're right, I don't want to know.
I don't want to know either.
Oh, God.
It's about 15 different stories.
Wow.
Mostly Sarah Jane.
It's raining pretty heavily there by the sounds of things.
I like the summary rather than the details.
Anyway, like I say, the fact that they're torturing the whale with a laser thingamajig really upsets the doctor, and he decides he's got a couple of choices. One is to kill the whale, or the other is to kill the humans. What was the third choice?
Kill our human.
Make it brain.
Pardon? No, make it like a vegetable.
Make it like a vegetable, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
now, was anyone else... this no longer bothers me as much as it did back when I first saw this, but...
Could have been a carrot.
I was bothered by the fact that we were repeating the exposed brain being tortured thing so soon. Repeating it at all. I mean,
Ood. In the Planet of the Ood, it wasn't quite torturing the brain. It was just disconnecting the circle, and it didn't say it was hurting the brain at all. Making the Ood go crazy. I didn't see it as actual physical torture. This was literally shooting something into it.
Yeah, I agree with Reese. Yeah, this one was actual torture. The other one didn't strike me as torture.
Yeah, the Queen's options are abdicate or forget.
Well, the Ood didn't like it, did they?
No, they didn't. I'm saying, so she watches a video of herself, you know, persuading herself to press the forget button. The Doctor really is not happy. This is where we first see him, the Matt Smith Doctor, being angry. And I remember at the time being particularly impressed with that particular performance. And that hasn't changed.
But she doesn't talk to his teeth.
No, he doesn't.
Thank goodness.
No, he doesn't.
Oh, but he can't say he's so sorry.
And what's the doctor say? No human is... I can't remember what he says now.
Has the right to say anything to me today.
No, I said it. Nobody talked to me. Nobody human has anything to say to me.
I see, And they all get sent into the corner to sulk, don't they? The kids and Amy, while the doctor devises a way of sort of humanely killing the whale. So, early on in the story, if we've got to mention, the doctor does say to Amy, you know, look, watch and learn and take everything in. And this is what we then allude to when she suddenly, everything sort of dawns on her what can be done. Because basically the scorpion tail comes out and just gently taps the little girl on the back. And she realises that it can't bear, the creature can't bear children crying.
Do we see anywhere in both the computer generation of the beast or later, do we see anything on that creature that where a tentacle like that could come from, let alone several of them?
Nope.
It's got a few things coming out the back, though, that look like tentacles.
Yeah, but
those are extremely
weird. Nothing like you see, though.
There is,
but that, I mean, that could be on top of it where it's sitting.
I haven't got a problem with that.
Me either.
Bother me in the slightest.
Well, it's so huge that could just be like hair follicles almost, and maybe it's too small to be put into that model.
It's a science fiction fantasy TV show. Exactly. They can do whatever they blooming well like.
Exactly.
Here's a question: is this the same species of space whale as in Torchwood, the episode Meat?
It could be. I was hoping it would be.
It's not the one in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, though.
Oh, no, not again.
That was a sperm whale.
Yeah, it's such a peaceful creature. I don't see it having those tentacles.
Okay. Anyway, right, hang on. I've got to do a quick pause here.
Uh-oh.
This is going to be very clever, this. Don't you dare
Adam
knock
never
my wire.
A chance to compliment himself.
Yeah, that's very clever. Clever silence. Clever silence.
Where are those crickets again?
Yeah. Open your window, Reese.
Enough of saying clever silence and being very cheeky. I was just changing from one device to another. So, yes, it was clever, actually.
He doesn't quite sound like himself.
I'm now going to leave the building. Now I have got no access to the video, so it might be a good time now to play an advert.
Welcome to the world of football mad Troy Brown, a typical 15-year-old with a loving family, a tight-knit group of friends, and a nice house in Cowes on the Isle of Wight. Materially, he has a comfortable life, but then no hormone-ridden, angst-filled teenager would ever describe their life as comfortable, and Troy was no exception. Plagued as he was, the whole world is against me complex, no girlfriend syndrome, and the pains of requited love or lust, and the usual horde of teenage frustrations and obsessions. A privileged peek into his private, warts and all, 2003 diary reveals transformation of his boring, ordinary life as Troy tries to negotiate his many twists and turns in what was to become the most extraordinary year of his life. Fraught with family secrets, misunderstandings, dangerous liaisons, challenging adventures, shocking realities, and unexpected outcomes, interspersed with teenage insights into the state of the world, including war, crime, death, and disease. As you travel with Troy on his one-year life-changing journey, you will undoubtedly laugh at the adolescent humour, cry at his misfortune, sympathise with his plights, and empathise with his feelings as he works through his personal traumas, and is forced to learn by his mistakes. Be warned, however, those of a sensitive disposition may also be shocked by some of the diary's content, possibly offended, but you are, after all, delving into the grimy mind of a pubescent youth. The Diary of an Unwilling Virgin by Adam Pearson. Available as a paper book or as an e-book from Amazon and iTunes. And, if you're interested in the sequel, From Troy to Man, Troy Brown resumes his diary. He is 17, and he desperately wants to leave home and start his life as a bachelor. He has just been dumped by his first proper girlfriend, and not because he has accidentally cheated on her twice during their relationship. She wants to play the field. Most of his friends have moved away from the island, and life out of school proves to be quite a challenge for him. Troy is forced to grow up because of his incredible ability to make mistakes. His mistakes, as usual, are of a sexual nature, and the consequences of unprotected sex begin to appear, seemingly out of thin air. Faced with fatherhood and separation from his children, Troy's attitude to life changes forever. His main concern isn't football anymore. It is how the hell is he going to be able to be a real father to his children, and how many children has he got? Of course, his life is full of the other problems associated with day-to-day life. Will he ever find a true love? Will he ever find a job that he is truly happy in? Can he solve a murder mystery? Can he avoid being murdered himself? Will he ever be able to be a true father to his children? All of these questions are answered in this book. If you thought that being a 15-year-old virgin was enough of a rollercoaster ride for Troy, read on. This year and a half of his life may leave you needing to ingest a large dose of motion pills. From Troy to Man is available as an ebook from Amazon and from iTunes. If you're a fan of quizzes, and happened also to be a fan of the Beatles, why not buy The Beatles Quiz Book by Adam Pearson? It is available as an ebook from Amazon or from iTunes.
Hi, this is Fraser Hines, and you're listening to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
But what we're actually going to do is, what we're actually going to do is continue talking. I mean, if you want to pick it up from where we left off, I'm sure you can. No? Okay,
where did we leave off?
The tentacle.
The doctor, the tentacle taps the children on the back, and we just.
No.
And the doctor being very angry and knowing that he's got to do something to the creature to make it mindless.
He was actually very unfair to Amy in that scene. The way, I know he was angry, but he said, I'm taking you home when I'm done here. I thought that was just a bit unfair.
Yeah, that was a bit, but a bit childish, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he didn't apologise afterwards either, did he?
Not taking us in the toilet, are you, Adam?
Well, I understood he wasn't aiming that really at Amy. He was aiming it at the humans in general for what they've done.
Well, he was, wasn't he? He said, I'm taking you home. He didn't say, I'm taking you home to the humans. He was specifically talking to Amy.
But he said, nobody human talked to me today.
I'm
talking about another moment where he said, I don't care if it was a mistake and you don't remember doing it, I'm taking you home.
You're right. He did say that to everybody, and then he said specifically to Amy about taking her home, which was a bit harsh. And then she saved the day.
She went through almost Sherlock again-like scene where, you know, she flashes everything she remembers.
Yes.
I wish she'd flash a bit more. That's what he said.
Reese is going to have funny dreams tonight.
Glad.
again.
Yeah.
Just in case listeners are wondering what the bloomin' going on, I'm currently driving along to pick Debbie up from her customer. So that's what I'm doing at the moment.
I thought the island was small enough that you could walk everywhere.
Yeah.
She can, but she is carrying a She is carrying a rather large bag of hairdressing equipment, and she wants to get round as quickly as possible. So on this odd occasion, I'm giving her a hand, and she doesn't feel that well. I did say last week she was ill. She hasn't properly.
I'll give her a hand.
Well, I'm nowhere near my
sand. I'll give her a foot. It was a fair swap.
Deck. Be quiet. Anyway, so there we got up. Moving on to the story. Yes. So, so basically...
That was a Goon Show reference, by the way.
Amy, this is from memory, Amy grabs the queen and makes her press the abdicate button.
Mm. Right, right.
And then
she even says to the doctor, you know, about being old and not being able to stop yourself from interfering when you see children cry. So he's like the beast.
Yeah.
And basically, they've not realized that the whale voluntarily gave itself up to help them, so they don't need to torture it.
That's why it came along in the first place.
So why did they start torturing it?
Yeah, why did they start torturing it? That's always bugged me.
Yeah.
No, but it came along. It couldn't communicate.
I'm just guessing they did it because they didn't have any control over it. And they thought, well, we need to go somewhere.
Yeah, they believe that they captured it. They don't look at it as some, you know, the beast volunteering. They felt like they captured it.
Oh. But it still doesn't make sense.
Well, I think maybe at first it volunteered itself, but they wanted to take control and guide where it was going. That's why they built thing around it and tortured it.
You're saying that they didn't want to sort of risk the whale deciding I want to help you anymore, that sort of thing.
Yeah. The way they
say it sounds more like they believe that it came along, but they captured it and have kept it, in submission all this time, that they never saw it as a voluntary act.
Yeah, that's what I
thought. Yeah.
Didn't they make a reference that to shock it makes it go faster? As if they needed to go faster?
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Maybe
when they stop it, they're going faster.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, so that's it. So the doctor then, what happens? Something just stops, doesn't it? The torture stops almost immediately, doesn't it? And they just carry on their merry way. And the doctor and Amy hug. I think that's the sort of unspoken apology. They're all dry now. That's what I could think of was Amy's still in that blooming dressing gown. Sorry.
Yeah, which is all wrinkled now. Dry.
The smell must have been a terrible dry set.
But it is going to dry out eventually.
Yeah, but it's still going to smell.
Yeah. And they both their hair is still damp, you know. It's like, ugh.
Yeah, they could have nicked to the TARDIS and changed. But, that was... And then, of course, sorry, Reese. Carry on.
I was thinking, he's standing there thinking about what has happened, and it just hit me now that I think maybe he was wanting to have a Tennant moment. Of Tennant always liked to show off a bit, like in The Waters of Mars. He was saying, I can control time, and he's being very theatrical, and the character was too. And I was thinking maybe he wanted the moment of saving the day, but Amy took it and did the right thing. Mm-hmm. And he had to realize that, yes, there are two people, and he has to share that responsibility with her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So a very, very good assessment, I'd say that is. I mean, basically, that's the end of the story. So they sort of, as they say in the Bigger on the Inside podcast, they sort of get in the TARDIS and vroop, vroop away. but I say vroop, vroop away, we see the annoying, tedious crack on the side of the spaceship.
I don't mind it.
It comes there.
Yeah.
What it is now.
Which,
it
of course, doesn't make any sense. But then they get a phone call. He's going to take her home, but then they get that phone call.
Yeah.
He didn't say he was going to take her home at that point, did he?
Yeah, he says he's going to take her home.
I love the way he answers the phone.
50 years before she was born.
I thought that was quite a long time before that. About he said him saying he didn't. Oh, stop! So I'm speaking English again. He didn't say I'm taking you home once they got back into the TARDIS, did they?
I didn't think so.
No. So once they're in the TARDIS, the phone rang. That was it. And
actually why they went in there pretty quickly, because Amy hears the phone ringing and he goes, so I better go and answer that.
Yeah, and she's about to tell him that she needs to go home because of her wedding, or that she's engaged.
Oh, that's right.
And the phone interrupts her telling him that. Yeah.
That was a good line. Have you ever run away from something because you don't know what to do, or you're worried, or you're scared? And he said, yeah, but a long time ago. And she said, what happened? And then he goes, hello.
Yeah. There's quite a lot of good little sort of references to old Doctor Who in that sort of little scene.
Early on, when they were sitting on the bench talking about Mandy, who was crying, Amy asked if he'd ever been a parent.
Mm.
That's right, yeah.
That's
I like the way he plays that off.
And he does not answer.
For a second.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did
Susan come
along?
I like the way he
kind
of played that off. He thought about it and then changed the subject.
Yeah. Yes.
It doesn't always do that, because quite regularly he does actually mention he used to be a parent or a father or a son or whatever.
You never stop being a parent. So
I suppose
not
the fact
used
that
to be.
All of the time laws are wiped out, he doesn't really want to talk about it much, because that would obviously include his family.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I like the way he answers the phone too. When Amy hands him the phone, he goes, "Oh, hello, dear."
Oh, dear.
Now, remember, just a couple of years later, there's that little short where Amy answers the phone and he comes in. He's dressed in the tux and everything. He goes, "You never answer that phone." The one where he's carrying the goldfish.
Yes.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Well, he did tell her this time, so maybe with permission she can answer the phone.
Okay.
That's how I'll justify that.
Boy, the odd noises coming from...
Yeah, so I'm just dropping Deb off at her next lady.
I hope you're gentle about it.
Yeah.
Did she even acknowledge you were doing the podcast?
Well, she obviously knew I'm doing the podcast. That's why she didn't say anything.
I'm looking at the slow motion of that creature carrying the city, and I don't see a single thing on that creature anywhere that could possibly be those tentacles.
When they show the CG though.
I mean, I see the little the taily things hanging out the back, and they're all soft and spongy and sparkly. There's not a thing.
But, yeah,
Mary.
I know. Also notice.
Mary.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Two things. It's Kirby's job to be pedantic.
Yeah.
And the other thing, of course, that if you judge the size of the whale in comparison to the whole city, those little tendril things are microscopic. So you wouldn't see them from that far out.
Mm, exactly.
If you look at the scale.
And they don't bother me.
Well, they do me.
Think of where they are, though, Mary. They're right on top of the whale. We don't see what's on top of the whale, So you can't actually see them because you can't see what's under there.
Well, but they show the creature on the computer in
a very, very dodgy model.
Yes, that's not quite.
And they're absolutely smooth on top. Oh, well, all right.
Yes,
I give it up.
Because everything else about it is smooth.
From that distance, you know, it may look smooth. If you look at the, you know, you might look at your face might look quite smooth. But if you look at it microscopically, it'll look rough and have lots of scales on it. That's what I find.
Not mine.
No, I'm talking about a face, not necessarily your face.
Yes.
I'm talking about microscopic.
That's just what Adam sees every morning, okay, Mary?
very good.
Now, thinking about these episodes, when I first watched them, I was thinking it's amazing how linked in they are, because this one carried on pretty much straight away, you'd assume, since she's still in her 90 from the 11th hour. And then you see the Daleks, or the Dalek at the end of this one, or the silhouette of it, and they travel straight there, although there's kind of a two-month gap or something like that, as we hear in that story. But they're so tightly linked.
Yes.
They used to do that back in, like, with the very first Doctor.
Yeah, with Hartnell,
I know.
Yeah.
That was new for new Doctor Who.
Yeah, new for the new series, though, really, isn't it?
Yes.
Chris, what I wonder about is this repressive society that they live in. If you get this impression at the end, if the creature's nice now, we don't need all this oppression. But they didn't need it in the first place because everybody was forgetting why what was driving their city. And I think a repressive society that's been in place for, 300 years isn't going to go away overnight. So I don't, there's no resolution to, okay,
they
how did this.
They often do that, though. They often
how
do
does
that.
How repressiveness it's... start, and why has it continued for so long?
Yeah. But, like,
Mary,
it's 300 years.
Philosophical.
Well, I was just wondering about that as I watched it.
Yes.
But if you look at a lot of Doctor Who's, they always do that. They come into, it's like, they go to a planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they just happen to go to what seems to be the nerve center of the planet. Whatever actions they do on that specific city that they're in seems to affect everything planet-wide. You know, it's just one of the things that...
True.
Yeah, they come along, the Doctor does something, many times in the Baker era. It's like with the Robots of Death, and he comes up and says... Oh, this will be the end of civilization as we know it, if the robots have attacked and done the thing. And that's supposed to, affect everything else. Yeah. They often do that, so...
Yeah, fair enough. But anyway, before we sum up what we think of this particular story, is somebody watching TV, because I'm sure I can hear strange voices in the background.
Yeah, I've got TV in,
Good grief. It's like having Alicia on the show, isn't it? Never mind.
Are we not enough for you, Robert? We can't hold your total attention?
It's just on in the background, that's all.
Oh, I see, okay. Honestly, right. So yeah, I'll say my piece on this first. I mean, it's, as Ben would say, it's all right. It's okay. the funny thing was, at the end of it, I was sort of half expect. I'd forgotten all about Victory of the Daleks. I thought the next story was the Angel one. And I thought, oh God, Victory of the Daleks, because the phone rang. I'd forgotten about that bit. So that but doesn't say much of Victory of the Daleks, is it, unfortunately. But it was okay. There's some sort of That's not one I'd think, right, I know what I'm going to watch. I'm going to stick on The Beast Below, to be fair. Yeah. I probably don't mind watching it in this sort of run of watching a whole series, but it's not one I think of, or I must put on and watch it. Mm. That's about it, really, for me.
I didn't even remember that Stephen Moffat wrote it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
It's one of his more forgettable ones, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just saying about me, it is, me, I... he tends to write the bigger, more impactful episodes, which is why he's been splitting the seasons, because in splitting it, we didn't end up with a Vampires in Venice. We got Let's Kill Hitler, which is fantastic, but it's big and triumphant because it's the return of Doctor Who, and it reveals several questions about who... No, it's actually a season that they split, because there's normally... Never mind. But yeah. That explains a lot of questions. Pepper. This is kind of pretty basic compared to that. And I'm just thinking maybe he prefers to write the bigger episodes.
Maybe he does.
I had totally forgotten about this one. When we just went by the title, we're going to watch The Beast Below, the one that sprang to my mind was the Silurian story, which made me wonder, why aren't we doing both parts of that? Why are we only doing one? But I mean, that's really Hungry Earth, you know, and all that. So I'd forgotten about this one, and now I know why, because I have no desire to go back and watch it again, except it's a nice story about Amy, and I found that she was the one that held my attention through this whole episode. Yeah,
I did find it, you know, interesting. I did find the Doctor and Amy interesting to watch, you know, if it's their first proper adventure together. It wasn't terrible. The bits that people find annoying about it, I can sort of explain under my sort of bracket of science fiction, fantasy TV show, even the 10.
I'll explain tendrils. Later.
It's a bit annoying. Where I remember at the time I was really sort of hacked off of the fact they were in the tongue of the whale when they got sort of thrown up by it. They ended up, you know, back up in a room somewhere, and that for me didn't make sense until, of course,
one of the buildings shakes, or the tin on it shakes, but.
Yeah.
It looks really weird, but the sign on the tin doesn't shake it. I never really bought that, but that's just a very pedantic thing.
Yeah, and again, another pedantic point is looking at that whale floating through the sky. There's nothing in front of its mouth, so how did they end up in a room?
Yeah.
Well, whales have blowpipes, don't they?
They what?
Whales have blowpipes, don't they?
But that's
what
breathing.
What on earth has happened to your sound? Mm-hmm. Okay.
What?
You can talk.
Can you hear me?
What do you mean I can talk? Yes. What's wrong with my sound?
You sound like you're talking into the phone. You're talking like you're on a phone.
I can't be. I'm not on the phone anymore. I'm talking
through... No, I'm talking to Robert.
Oh, sorry.
he sounds now like what you did when you were on the phone.
Oh, goodness. I don't know.
That's better.
I don't mind this story as much as I did back when it was first on.
Why?
It's no Curse of the Bad Plot, first of all.
There's a story called that.
But you hadn't seen that when it came on, though, kid.
I think I was bothered by the Star Wars references, and also, as I said on Facebook, the writing for the new Doctor was different from David Tennant stuff. So I was just getting used to the way that the stories
characterization.
Yeah. I did watch it three or four times when it first came out, but I do that with every time.
The torture of the creature is repellent, and I don't want to go back to that.
And like I said earlier, I was kind of bothered by the fact that we're dealing with an exposed brain again so soon after having one.
Yes,
It was kind of repetitive.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's okay. It's not one that I'll go back and watch voluntarily, but it's not one
You did. Just today, or whenever you watched it.
It's not one that I absolutely dislike either. And Liz Tien is great. I love Liz Tien.
Yes. Yes.
Mm. Well, you know, he said about that pair, I mean, you know, he said my pet hate was about the whale sort of vomiting.
Oh. Are you all right, Adam? Have you been eating with the Queen, have you?
Dear, I feel much better.
How long did it take you to find that one?
A while, actually. I don't know why. It's just got a certain... hang on. Something I...
God, je ne sais
quoi. There's something I've got to do first.
That's not bad.
Oh, dear. Oh, I do love this little machine. It's fantastic. Anyway, yes. So, well, who hasn't... Anyway, right. Anybody else before we try and get some feedback in before Mary's departure?
Well, I'd just like to say it's not as mediocre as The Curse of the Black Spot. But it's not, and it's not as brilliant as The Curse of the Fatal Death. But it's pretty good.
Okay,
there you go, Kirby.
Anybody else?
I agree with the others.
Okay, is that it?
Yeah.
Because yeah. It's time for feedback. Yes, I have my own feedback sound.
Oh.
No, that's.
Not as good as ours.
No, I think it is, actually. As I was saying. Where did I get to? Yeah, feedback. Right. Yeah, I've got this from... Hang on, I've got to change my speaker over to here. This is highly technical. From somebody called Professor Philip W. Cerner. I meant a doctor, actually.
20 Megabyte Crew, it's Dr. Phil, and surprisingly, I'm in my car, but for a change, it's not moving.
Hey.
I'm actually putting myself in 5 minutes to debrief after last week's... a vomit of information, which I sent in early because I was doing a lot of concerts out of town. But anyway, the 11th hour, certain times when Doctor Who, the show, has regenerated, I've always said, okay, this new thing is my Doctor Who. There's something that speaks about certain eras that really grabbed me. Like recently, Series 7 of Classic Who, Pertwee's first season, has been an absolute favorite of mine. The Troughton has been a favorite doctor for me recently. What grabbed me at the beginning of the 11th hour, maybe just the entire episode, was that for the first time in a while, it really felt like New Who was really appreciating its roots in the original run of Doctor Who from 63 to 89. We already had the info stamp thing in The Next Doctor, but we kind of had that ignored in a way as the Doctor went back in the end of time. So this season of Series 5 of Doctor Who... really feels like it starts to connect the show more back to its earliest roots, as opposed to just things like Sarah Jane and, the Doctor's ID having William Hartnell on it and such that you see in The Vampires of Venice. But one thing I find that's comforting is the opening scene, which was actually added rather late in the game, has the same sort of bombast we're used to experiencing from Murray Gold's scores, especially from Series 4 and the specials. And I would say that as soon as we get the new theme tune, Murray Gold's new arrangement of Ron Grainer's theme anyway, after that, we get a completely new kind of theme. And I should say tone for the entire season. Something a bit different. And it reminds me a great deal, in a way. It's composer like Dudley Simpson, who will be having live concerts of his music this year, which is fabulous. I guess Mark Ayers has been doing some recordings and such. That's very exciting.
Ooh, excellent.
But how he wrote music for Doctor Who changed significantly from the Troughton era into the Pertwee era, and then a bit more into Tom Baker's era. I mean, you get kind of a sameness in the middle of Baker before he leaves the show, but in a way, Murray Gold has regenerated in a similar way to Dudley Simpson, not in regards to technique and composition and style, but that they both have the ability to reinvent themselves and what their contributions bring to Doctor Who. Now, I think in a way, in the publicity materials, the 11th Doctor's theme, I Am the Doctor, is a bit overused everywhere in Series 5.
I love it,
though. But the main issue is that it's a series of
phrases in 7/4, 7/8 with different layers superimposed. It could be the string layers, be the percussion layers, be it the brass. It's really just the same performance with different elements in and different elements out. You don't really have a real reorchestration of the theme. Now, is that a criticism? No, because they have such a ridiculously short period of time to do the music for Doctor Who. It's just something that I always try to keep in mind, because I think from series one onwards, I've had all sorts of mixed feelings about Murray Gold, and in a way, I would say series five is a great breath of fresh air when it comes to Gold's music. Now, Matt Smith. One of the reasons why I think I find him in the new series, because I kind of have my favorites. Tom Baker was my favorite classic series Doctor. Colin Baker is my favorite audio Doctor. And Matt Smith, to me, feels the most of a synthesis between Tom Baker's madness and Patrick Troughton's playfulness. I really find that he's the most classic out of the new series run of Doctors. Now, does that mean I didn't like the emo vibe that was David Tennant? Well, maybe at the end, I would say that I probably didn't so much. And it was probably time for a regeneration. But nonetheless, we have what we have. And I think that where the show is going in the 50th will be very interesting. And to see how many things that played up or small details of whose shadow was running across the shot, if it was Prisoner Zero or someone else. Before the Doctor returns late for Amelia Pond.
It was the Doctor, yes.
If that's going to go somewhere, the Duck Pond, you know, being the ducks being sucked through the crack or not, or, you know, things that are all little MacGuffins for the fans to obsess about if they play up later. Probably not likely, because now the ponds are gone. But hopefully that we'll continue to see that seeds planted in this series that you're about to embark on, hopefully will be paid off later. And you know who I'm talking about. Silence will fall.
I'm sure it
all
will.
That stuff. Yes. So, I mean, we know who the Silence are, T-S-N-C-E. But we'll see how they have to play in. What could be, soon, not necessarily this season, the end for Matt Smith's
series.
Doctor.
Hope not.
Series.
I guess, you know, everyone has really strong affections for their first Doctor. And believe it or not, even though I said Tom Baker was my favorite classic series Doctor, my first televised Doctor was Colin Baker in Attack of the Cybermen. So I have a real soft spot for certain stories of his, even though I tend to prefer him a lot more in the audio. Well, anyway, that's enough rambling for me this week. Keep up the great work, everyone. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that was Dr. Phil. Thank you, Dr. Phil.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Phil.
And I always thought that he talked about the way that Murray Gold kind of regenerated his style. I think that could have come with Stephen Moffat as well, because Russell T. Davies always wanted the big scale and the grandeur of the episodes, but also with the music. And I'm sure he was pushing Murray to make it a bit bigger and a bit grander, whereas with Stephen, he could say, well, make it as subtle as you want, or try new things if you wanted to. And there are lots of subtle moments with the newer stuff, especially in the season we're talking about now, with the crack. It's eerie theme. It's very season. It's very subtle and very, very atmospheric.
Deary me.
Yeah. I do love the Series 5 soundtrack, though.
Anyway,
the season 5 track's really good. Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, the series 5 one is good, isn't it?
Yeah, the series 5 one is very good.
There are two series of Doctor Who, the old one and the new one.
Anyway, so I'll have some more audio messages. Thank you.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. In 1954. CBS broadcast Casino Royale with Barry Nelson as James Bond, so he would be the first James Bond. CBS. Was there a Doctor Who episode with those initials? The Beast Below by Stephen Moffat. The Doctor meets a queen. Not that one. Starship UK has tower blocks for various English counties. You might wonder about Wales. The whale is underneath, see, doing all the hard work. Oh, I sound like a Welshman. This tennis played by Alison Chaney, who was in Scream with a Shalka, which was flash animated. Not that one. Liz 10 says, "Help us, Doctor. You're our only hope." A bit like Princess Leia in Star Wars. Leia was the daughter of a queen. Not that one. If Matt Smith was in Series 8, then he would have done 4 series. I went to Blackpool. It might have been 1962. We went to the top of Blackpool Tower. On the way down, we had a view of the ballroom where the Beatles were on stage. I wonder if there are any recent books available about the Beatles.
Yes, sorry, I'm just trying to find an appropriate there. Thank you, Ian. That was Ian Kirk, everybody.
Yeah. Okay. So should Kevin be a comedy writer.
Has Kevin got anything to be pedantic about on that one? Because I have.
Oh, have you?
No.
Yeah, Liz 10 was played by Sophie Okonedo, not whoever he mentioned.
Oh.
That's true. What he was referencing was the character's name in Scream of the Shocker, played by Sophie.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
The Flash animated.
Right, if Robert can sort of tear himself away from the TV for long enough, we can have some more audio messages. This is from Patrick Bishop. Here it comes.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast. This is Patrick from North Hollywood, California. Sorry I didn't get a chance to send in feedback last week, but when I came back from Galley, I also brought back with me convention flu, which knocked me out for about a week and a half. So that was real lovely. but I guess that's what happens when you're spending 4 days around 3,500 complete strangers in close proximity. So. Anyway, I'm back and fit now, and with my comments on The Beast Below. Now, I hadn't seen this since it originally aired, so I didn't like it as much this time going through. I think the core to this episode is the relationship between Amy and the Doctor. I think this episode is probably built just to show, you know, show them bond together. But it's a lot going on here. You got the Smilers, you got Liz 10, you got the Save the Whale thing, you got a lot of, you know, political undertones. I mean, there's a lot going on in this episode. There's a lot good in it. But I think it's not really put together all that well. Mainly, I give it a pass because it's the second episode of the season, and you know, you're just trying to establish the relationship between the Doctor and his new companion. That did well. They did a good job with that. So no complaints there. I just remember liking it more when I first aired it, probably because of the newness of it all, the newness of Amy. They're both very charming, Amy and the Doctor. Lots of good dialogue in this between them. I just didn't really... The plot just didn't really care for it the second go-around. But still enjoyable. Like I said, even bad Doctor Who is better than, like, you know, 90% of the stuff that's on TV anyway.
Agreed.
So anyway, that's my review of The Beast Below. Overall, I don't know what I'd give it. I'd probably give it like a C+. Probably as high as I'd give it. But still enjoyable.
Yeah, I agree.
Who, it's all good.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks, guys, and have a good week.
Thank you, Patrick, and thank you also very much for your wonderful...
Did everyone have a hard time hearing him? Like
yes,
I did.
It was.
Yeah, I had trouble hearing him.
Sorry, really, but it was very quiet, but I will boost it up for the final version of the podcast. I'll be quiet.
Robert, quiet.
That's what Chewie thinks about
There's
it.
One more piece of audio. Have you got enough time for my one more piece of audio?
Go ahead, play it.
Okay, we'll play it then, if you insist. Hang on. I'll press the relevant buttons, and here we go.
I do insist.
This is Matthew from North Alabama sending in feedback Matthew! On the Series 5 episode, The Beast Below. In the new series, a new Doctor's second story is always a trip into the future, be it the Ninth Doctor and Rose's trip to the end of the world, or the Tenth Doctor's trip to New Earth with Rose. The Eleventh Doctor would be no exception to this rule, as him and Amy Pond would take a trip to the Starship UK and face the Beast Below.
Yes.
The Beast Below as an episode does what good science fiction has always done, hold up a mirror to our reality. This episode is very much a satire, particularly of politics, which isn't surprising given that this episode was written, produced, and aired in the lead-up to the 2010 UK general election. The point is in fact hammered home by the voting scene and the Doctor's memorable line, quote, "And once every 5 years, everyone chooses to forget what they've learned. Democracy in action," end quote.
Going along with that is the satirical takes
on national security and state secrets, as represented by the Smilers, who keep the secret, the Queen being kept in the proverbial dark, and indeed, the titular Beast itself. What Moffat has written here is a political satire in the tradition of such old Who stories as The Sunmakers and The Happiness Patrol. Speaking of the old series, in fact, Moffat does what the production team in the 1980s never quite managed to do. The Star Whale, or as it was known back then as the Space Whale, has finally showed up in televised Doctor Who at last. There's more to this episode, though. Matt Smith's performance covers a slightly different range from what we saw in the 11th Hour, as the Tower of London scene unleashes the darker side of this brand new Doctor. Yeah. Karen Gillan, having been so well introduced in the 11th Hour as well, gets to show that there's more to Amy Pond than a pretty face, or indeed
there
long
There certainly
legs,
is.
Particularly in that aforementioned scene where she sees what the Doctor can't and provides the key to saving the day. There's also the production design, which brilliantly blends together different elements, retro, modern, and futuristic, into the Starship UK. There's some iffy CGI work at the end, but that's a superficial detail. What the Beast Below is, then, is an intriguing episode. Part satire, part science fiction story, with good performances and strong production design. To my mind, it's a bit of Overlook 2 just begging to be rediscovered. Best wishes to everyone at the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast from Matthew Kressel.
I am your father.
Thank you, Matthew.
Wow. Yeah, he brought up something that hit me at the time in the episode, but then I forgot about, which is about the political satire. Was that to do every 5 years. Uh-huh.
When you said you brought it up. You forgot about it initially, you said, didn't you?
Right.
Was that to do with the silence? For God's sake.
I do have to go, so I'll say goodbye to all.
You better go now.
And let me know what the next recording is.
Sunday.
Bye-bye, Adam, Kirby, Reese, Robert. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, Mary. Bye. Hang on. I think that'll do me. Hang on. That was Mary Lang, everybody. Anyway, this is fun, isn't it? Right, so that was all the feedback, and I'm so pleased we managed to get it all in within the bounds of Mary being on the show. Do you think we missed anything? Do you think we rushed through Beast Below? I don't think we did. I think we
sort of... No, because it's not much of a story, is there? Really?
Yeah, it's such an average story that we can't get into incredible detail with it.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I didn't then.
What incredible pedantry.
Indeed. Right, I tell you what I've got to do now.
Dog's dinner.
That was a reference to the Spice Girls. I've got to go and put the dog's dinner on. I shall be back after these messages.
This is Toby Whithouse, and you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
This is Toby Haydoke, and you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hi, this is Lou Jameson, or Louise Jameson, and you're listening to the 20 Megabytes Doctor Who podcast. Rah.
This is Daphne Ashbrook, and you are listening to 20 Megabyte podcast. Don't miss it.
So, who's this show sponsored by?
Sorry, I had to recover from that. That was quite good. Is it whoone.com.au? Oh, no, I got it wrong.
I think it was whoone.co.uk.
Oh, yeah, it's whoone.co.uk.
Last I checked, it was whoone.co.uk.
Robert, can we just make sure, is it whoone.co.uk?
I think it is whoone.co.uk.
Oh, good.
Has anybody seen that trailer, the new one?
Oh.
BBC One teases Doctor Who's return.
Oh.
Has anybody seen that?
Why don't you post it to Facebook?
Right. No, I'm back.
I've just seen Doctor Who
front
News.
Front and sides, too.
Right then, I'm going to do this. It's an original idea by the Doctor Who podcast. We're going to have a little quiz because, of course, I am currently writing a quiz book.
No Wikipedia there.
Which will be very, Kirby. Very, yeah, Wikipedia ban. But we'll know if you're using
Wikipedia.
It.
Wikipedia. Could you say Wikipedia?
Or TARDIS Wiki. All those, basically turn off your internet connection other than the one you need for Skype.
Exactly.
I was about to say that.
Why did I drop out?
So this is the United States versus Australia. I'm going to do is the first, should we say five questions or should we go for ten? Should we go for nine? First nine pretty questions sure. What I wrote for the forthcoming Doctor Who quiz book, which I am writing currently, and it'll be out in a couple of months' time. Yes, a Doctor Who quiz book. What I am writing. And it's going to be something on the lines of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast quiz book, or it's going to be a mention of the podcast somewhere in the quiz book. And listeners, if you'd like to have your name in the back of the book, this is an e-book, by the way, so it'll be an e-mention rather than a printed mention, but it's still a mention, please let me know in the usual way. That's where you can send in feedback at 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. Send you me your name.
Are you releasing it, Adam?
Well, whenever it's written.
Just do you want me to do the cover?
You want to do the cover, do you?
Yeah.
Well, you do the cover then. I can't guarantee that it'll pass the copyright thingies of the BBC, because I'm pretty sure the cover might have some, the BBC might have some issues over. But you try something, and we'll send it up to Chris at Apex Publishing, and if he likes it, it'll get used. But I haven't any real control over the artistic nature of the covers, apart from I did the cover for the Troy to Man book and the
diary. Yeah, was that a photo on the Isle of Wight, wasn't it?
No, it's the first one of the Solent, actually, which is the gap of water between the Isle of Wight and the mainland. Anyway, yes. So if you want to have your name in the back of the book, or indeed if you want to attempt to contribute questions, you are welcome to send them in. I can't guarantee I will put them in, but I'm thinking of writing a load of questions myself and then having another section.
I've got an idea, Adam.
Oh, God, what? Yes?
You could have a whole section devoted to where things were filmed, and Kirby could do that.
No. I'm picking randomly parts of the 50 years and doing I don't want to do a section which is devoted to a specific time. I want to do random questions throughout the whole 50 years. So it could be, as you'll find out, with the first nine questions, it's going to be nine because it's got to be a winner somewhere along the line, of the first nine questions of the book. They're all over the place. They're part of the new era, old era. You know, they could be anywhere. It's randomly done. What I will ask, if people want to provide questions, I'll probably, after my large section, might have a listener's question section if they sort of conform to the format of the book. So if you feel that way inclined, listeners and co-contributors to the 20 Megabyte podcast, you're welcome to send them in to 20mb.feedback@gmail.com, where you can also send in your feedback. That'd be nice.
Excellent.
So are you ready? How are we going to... Right, if you want to answer the question, you call out your name and I will decide...
Your name.
Or you'll be disqualified. Right, so question number one. Are you in for this, Reese?
Yes.
What is the name of Donna Noble's father in the 10th Doctor story, The Runaway Bride?
I was in hospital at the time, so I don't remember. I didn't watch it.
You're frozen out. That is the wrong answer. Anyone else?
Was it
Jeffrey
Noble?
Without using Wikipedia, please, Reese.
I remember Jeff.
Right,
I don't know if you wanted the full name.
1 point to Reese. Rather suspiciously. Right. Question number two. In the first Doctor story, The Smugglers, where was the location footage shot?
Cornwall. It was Cornwall.
You did forget the part of the rules, Robert, where you're supposed to call your name out. Robert.
Give
Cornwall.
It to him.
Right, so that's a point to Robert. Well, technically 2 points to Australia. But
I read the book last year as well.
But I think Kirby's a bit outnumbered. Right, here we go. Number three. Who played the character Lynn Fitu in the fifth Doctor story, Four to Doomsday?
Ah, that was Enlightenment, wasn't
cricket.
It?
Cricket. been years since I watched that one. Sorry.
Yeah, same here.
Oh dear, is it going to be a blank?
It's a blank.
It's a blank. Okay, well the answer is Bert Kwok.
Oh, yes. Yes, that was right.
Of course it's right.
Kato. Kato. Yes.
Right, number four. What was the name of the narcotic drug that was at the centre of the plot in the fourth Doctor story, The Nightmare of Eden?
It was something like... Fraxin?
Is close
something
enough.
Like that,
is close
Fraxin.
Enough.
Fraxin. Yeah.
Is the correct answer. That's two to Robert, one to Reese. None to Kirby. See what happens when you have to switch off Wikipedia. Right. Question number five.
Do you know what 6:12 in the morning is?
Oh right.
Do you know what 8:13 at night is?
Be quiet.
Yeah, you're awake.
11:13 at night is.
Question number five. In what year was the fifth Doctor story, Warriors of the Deep, set?
Oh, I know it's in the future.
The future.
That's rather
not quite there yet. I can tell you from experience.
Are we going to get an answer?
No.
Well, no. I'm not going to. Bearing in mind, it was filmed in 1984. Mm. It was 2084. I thought that was a fairly straightforward one. That one, actually, but never mind. Right.
They have to do that, don't they?
Question number six. What character did James Saxon play in the sixth Doctor story, The Two Doctors?
Oh, that was... what's his name?
I don't know. I know the name. I've got it down in front of me.
The meat eater, the guy, the cannibal. What was his name?
Is the wrong answer.
Okay.
It was Oscar.
Oscar, the bird
crouch. The one who gets murdered in it, yes. Oscar.
The
yes.
Crouch.
Right. Yeah. Number seven. What was episode two of the first Doctor story, The Celestial Toy Maker, entitled? You're never going to get that one.
Oh,
no, I'm not.
Me either.
Wasn't the toy room, was it? No.
Ooh, very close. It was the Hall of Dolls.
Yeah,
obvious, that one. You should have picked that one up.
I should know that.
And I bet if there's some Doctor Who fans out there that knew the title, the answer to that one, because this is why these questions are hard. But it's got Doctor Who fans are very... pedantic, yes, and they like to be tested. As in this, number eight. In the 10th Doctor story, The Next Doctor, how did Jackson Lake come to believe he was the Doctor?
Reese
got in there.
Yeah.
The info stamp thingies. The info stamp.
But you said memory stick, though.
Well, me?
I said info stamp. And I said my name.
So, yeah, well, Reese is right anyway. Reese is right. Right, so that's...
he said memory stamp. I said info stamp.
No, I said my name, though.
Fight.
Yes, he did.
Moving on.
Half a point each.
All right, half a point
move
each.
Along.
Point each.
Move
right,
along.
Question number nine. What was the all... I'll start that one again. What was the all-female species... in the first Doctor story, Galaxy 4, called... What was the name of the species, the female species?
Robert.
No, it wasn't that. But go on, yes.
They were the Dravens.
Yes, it was. Robert wins!
And you know what the enemies were called? They were called the Rills.
Thank you for that. Over.
Only because I read that last year.
I could always
year.
deduct a point for being too clever, Clogsy.
No.
Because I read the book fairly recently.
Yeah. Yeah, that was basically the type of thing I'm looking for, really. There was another question I thought was really interesting, actually. What was it now, if I can find it? Oh, just one more for fun, if I can find the question I'm looking for.
Which story winds Kirby up the most?
Yes, right. At the black spot.
All right, here we go. What's Amy Pond's middle name?
Jessica.
Well done.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay.
We just saw that.
I know that. That's why I said that. Right. That will be forthcoming. My Doctor Who quiz book, which I'm really enjoying compiling. I'd compiled the first 40 questions in an hour because I've just finished, listeners, writing the Rolling Stones quiz book, which again was great fun.
And how much were you using Wikipedia?
Not at all.
You wouldn't, because you need reliable answers to that.
The only thing I use Wikipedia, like I said last week, the only thing I'd use Wikipedia or anything like that for is cross-referencing, but the Wikipedia would be the last choice in cross-referencing, because there are Rolling Stones websites out there which are more accurate, you know, information-wise. Specifically, the Rolling Stones website, funny enough. So, yeah, I do use it, but only for third or fourth cross-references and purposes.
And you porn.
I beg your pardon? I don't know what you're implying. Right. So let's see if we can dig up some news. I might disappear quickly if I start smelling something burning shovel in the kitchen.
Like Ben, did anybody got a boiling over sound effect?
Boiling over sound effect? Boiling over
sound effect. That wasn't all because...
That was just me.
Not I know. That's even funnier.
What, the bat boiling over sound effect?
Because it wasn't his internet, it was just him.
just my own incompetence, yes.
Okay, right then. Right then, so what have we got for news? That's quite a lot of news, because they've gone on to a second page since the last show. Let's have a look, see what it says, earlier news articles. Oh yeah, they've finished filming Adventure in Space and Time. That's been wrapped in the last couple of days. So, I can't wait to see that.
With a nice little bow on top.
Why are they wrapping it? We want to see it.
Apparently, the 10th Planet footage has been done by the same people who did the animation for Reign of Terror, which apparently is not very good. I haven't seen it yet, so I will reserve my own judgment on it as and when I get to see.
Can I just say something about it? I think what the people have problems with it is that it doesn't seem in style with the period. There's a bit too much editing, which, you know, you wouldn't have seen on the original show. And, you know, when you take something like the Invasion animation, that was more in suiting with the period.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's fine. I'm glad they've done it, though. It's like other people have said, you know.
Yeah, I am too, yeah.
I'm glad they've done it, and I hope they continue to do it.
Just to be able to see it instead of just listening to it and imagining it, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. The Splendid Chaps, is that podcast?
Yes, it is.
I won't mention that then. Series 6 Double Bill Down Under. A special screening of the opening two episodes of Series 6 is to take place across Australia and New Zealand on Thursday, the 14th of March. The BBC has announced.
Two things there.
What?
I don't know how they got their hands on something called Series 6. That doesn't exist, and it's those terrible episodes.
This is an American website, and it says, and I quote, a special screening of the opening two episodes of
Series...
bug. No, they just spelled it correctly. There's also, apparently... Be quiet. They've done Doctor Who in five languages.
Multilingual that'd be interesting to watch.
That's kind of fun.
Okay, is it something we need to see, or is it something audio will suffice?
Audio will suffice.
Yes.
Suffice was the word I was looking for there.
Yes.
Okay.
Full surface.
Right, let's see if I can do this for you. So what's this one then?
It's all from the same thing.
Well, I say gave.
He's speaking in English.
Through.
Salut. Yeah, just wait.
Salut.
Wait.
So, when are we going to 1969?
Everything was in place. I only had to do one more thing. I only had to die.
Oh, meu Deus.
Oh!
Vocês precisam se afastar.
Ah, Portuguese.
Haja o que houver agora, não interfiram.
Rocky.
É um astronauta. Um astronauta da Apollo em um lago.
Olha.
Oh, this is the end bit. There's River.
Nous y voilà.
French.
Nous y voilà enfin.
I knew that.
Je ne peux rien empêcher. La machine a le contrôle.
Laisse faire les choses, ça doit se produire.
Cours.
J'ai couru.
Je t'aime, je t'aime.
Je me suis battue.
Elle est trop française.
Mais elle est trop forte.
Oui, je sais.
A little what?
C'est pas grave. C'est ici que je vais mourir. C'est un point temporel fixe. Il faut que ça se produise, c'est ainsi que ça doit se passer.
Der Miserable.
Sie werden sich nicht mehr.
German?
Ah, German, ja. Yes.
Ja.
Sehen
ja.
Sie da.
Ja.
Wie spät ist das?
Das bin ich. Wie kann ich da drüben stehen?
Nein.
Das ist die zukünftige Sicht. Sie sitzen wegen Mordes im Gefängnis. Vermutlich erinnern Sie sich nicht.
Ein Unfall ist passiert.
Sie haben mich getötet.
Warum tun Sie das? Warum lassen Sie mich zusehen?
Sie sollen wissen,
Hukas.
Es ist unvermeidlich.
Es viel wichtiger
ist, würde verziehen.
Ti perdono completamente e per sempre.
Amore mio, ti prego, corri.
Non posso.
Il tempo può essere riscritto.
Non ti azzardare.
But what's this one? Did I miss that? I was looking away. No one's saying anything.
Ciao, dolcezza.
Pardon?
What have you done?
Well, I think I just drained my weapon systems.
But it's fixed.
I don't recognise this language. What's this one?
Time.
Fixed points can be rewritten.
No, they can't.
New Zealand?
Of course they can't. Who told
you?
New Zealand. Yes, very good. Yes, thank you, BBC Worldwide, for that.
Can I mention something?
No, you can't.
Because I just watched Star Wars episode 4 to 6 on the weekend.
Yes.
And 46. On Blu-ray. And in Empire Strikes Back, Boba Fett now has a Kiwi accent.
Oh.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Right. Before I move on to the rest of the news, I'm just going to check the dog's dinner.
Who did the animation for you? That's for it.
What?
What's that? Precious, apparently. Who did the animation for what, sorry?
The Ice Warriors.
Oh, I don't know. Who did the animation for the Ice Warriors?
Curios. You said it was the same people that did Reign of Terror. It isn't.
No, I did not. I was talking about the 10th Planet people were the same people that did Reign of Terror. So, I think you better apologize.
The 10th Planet people.
Excellent.
Pardon?
Excellent. Oh, no, don't make a joke. Don't fall into that one.
Anyway, hang on, there we go.
And, hey, technically, though, excellent. That is wrong.
What's wrong?
When you think about it, the 10th Planet, because Pluto got demoted.
I don't care if it was a planet. It's
really
silly.
The ninth planet, wouldn't it?
You're right. The missing episode is being done by the same people as the Reign of Terror. Never mind.
Anyway, right. Where do we get up to? The dog's trying to get in. Oh, for God's sake, will you stay in and not keep going in there? Get in there now! In and out!
Sorry.
Good
grief. I've stayed here. What do you mean?
I thought they were eating.
And all I can say to that is... Right. Yeah, as you were saying, Corius are doing the Ice Warriors. I can't wait!
Curious, you mean?
Yeah, what you just said. The bells, be quiet. The bells of St. John heralds Doctor Who's return at the end of this month, in fact. And there's a lovely picture of the Doctor and thank you, Clara. Clara. Flying through the shard, and the shards of glass is reflected of the Ice Warriors, as you can see if you look very closely in those pictures.
Don't tell Reese.
Especially
shut up.
The one next to the wheel. You mean especially the one next to the wheel, the front wheel.
Yes, indeed. 50th anniversary prints are available. Forbidden Planet have announced a set of limited edition prints to celebrate the 50th anniversary, with the first three to be released featuring the first, second and third Doctors as played by William Hartnell, Patrick Troughton and John Pertwee. Now that's a question you wouldn't have in a Doctor Who quiz, but who played the first Doctor? Now if you're buying a Doctor Who quiz book, you shouldn't really have the quiz book if you didn't know who the first Doctor was, should you face it?
Yes.
And
his surname isn't Who as well.
Yeah.
No, it isn't.
Yeah.
Who?
Oh, be quiet. Now, the BBC have done a tease for Doctor Who. It just says BBC One HD, Saturday 30th of March. That's it. So I'm looking forward to when they actually put some moving pictures.
We're
going
to have to figure out what we're going to do about recording.
Are we?
Because when we review that episode, are the Australians getting it the same day or the next day? Or
we don't know yet, which is very
annoying. No. It would be good if they do the internet option again, though, wouldn't it, Bruce?
Yes! Yeah.
But will you have seen it in time for, say, Sunday afternoon? Or Sunday
Maybe.
Evening? Or Monday? Yeah. Or whatever it is.
That's, Kirby, if they do what they did last year, which is make it available on online.
iView. Yeah.
Yeah, iView. ABC iView. Then I can watch it Sunday morning. What is that?
That was fun.
That
was good. I want a cup of tea. Oh my god.
Wow.
I really enjoyed that. That was really funny. Oh dear, I need to let one go. Oh dear. Right.
On the ABC they've got a trailer for things coming up this month, and Doctor Who is on there, but seeing as the BBC have said that everyone else has to show it after they have, I'm guessing it would have to be the 31st here, but they haven't confirmed that at all.
Okay.
Yeah, but they're probably going to show it a week later though, aren't they, Bruce?
I hope not.
I would guess so. Anyway,
but if they do make it, available online like they did last time, then I'll be happy.
Yeah, me too.
Indeedy. Right, we have a website that sponsors our show called whoone.co.uk. It's a shame that Mary's not here to get it wrong, but what?
We mentioned that while you were dealing with the dog's dinner.
Okay, if you mentioned it, did you talk about what they've got coming up on whoone.co.uk?
No.
Then you didn't mention it correctly. Then did you?
Sponsor.
What's that mean?
We just mentioned who we were sponsored by that, though.
Okay. New Frontiers, which is... what is it?
Never mind.
It's, I don't know what that is. It's a CD. Oh, Bernice Summerfield CD. That's on pre-order. There's a few things on pre-order here. About Time 1, About Time 3, About Time 4, About Time 5. Aztec Special Edition.
About Time 6?
Be quiet. Aztec Special Edition. Interested to know what actually you get as an extra that's not on the one I've got, but I suspect it's lots of interviews. I seem to remember there being quite a few.
Got that reconstruction of what's her name?
Reconstruction of what's her name?
You know, the ones that they found, one of the missing episodes, along with.
There's no missing episodes of Aztec. Oh, is that on there? Well, I'll be buying it then.
That's what you guys mentioned before, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, so if that's the case, then that will make it worth buying. So. But that's not. I'm just going to have a look at when it's actually, exactly what's on it with this fancy thing called the internet, and I don't mean Wikipedia.
The what?
I don't mean Wikipedia either. I'm just going to have a look, see what's
what net?
The internet.
Hey, you know,
what's
that?
We could record about the new episode on Monday because by then. The UK will have caught up with summertime.
I don't know. One step at a time. Oh, it's only £14 from another website I'm not allowed to mention. Right. Okay. Let's have a look. See what it says. It says product details. Certificate PG, year 1964. Was it? I thought it was 1963. Region 2.
I did too.
I don't say what special features are. Don't. Unless I click on
that.
That
was still part of the first series, wasn't it?
That's clever.
Mind you.
Wait, hang on.
Daleks came out at December.
Yeah, all right. Hang on. Now the other idiot dog wants to get in.
For God's sake, get in here! Don't run off when I say get in here. Stop.
Sorry.
Stop. Get in here.
I was sitting down.
All right. Right, anyway, here we go. This is what it says. That was your fault. Right. It's commentary with William Russell. That's who plays Ian Chesterton.
Well, I thought you were going to say William Hartnell then.
Carol Ann Ford, who plays Susan Foreman. And producer Verity Lamb. Will you be quiet? That's a David Tennant way of saying it.
Quiet.
Yeah, I reckon that's the original commentary because it's got William Russell, Carol Ann Ford, yeah, and Verity Lambert.
Yeah, probably.
Remembering the Aztecs. Some of them, some of these must be the same. Cortez and Montezuma, an extract from a 1970 Blue Peter. Restoring the Aztecs, making Coco.
Yeah, that's the Blue Peter thing.
Yeah, oh, TARDIS cam number 3. Optional Arabic soundtrack for episode 4.
Yeah, that's not new either.
Intro sequences. Galaxy 4, a reconstruction of the missing story.
There
Galaxy
you go,
4.
See?
That's the whole thing. So you've got the full episode and the reconstruction of the rest. Ooh, that does sound good, doesn't it, everybody?
Well, they got two episodes of Galaxy. Oh, no. They've got a little bit. They've got about a 5-minute sequence or something from Galaxy 4
not
that
much.
They had already.
But that does sound good. That does sound good. Anyway, Chronicle, The Realms of Gold. Doctor Forever, Celestial Toy Room. It's a square world, a whole scene going. That's an interview with director Gordon Fleming and a look at filming of his film Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD. So all in all, it's worth getting just for the Galaxy 4 thing. Don't you think?
I'll get it anyway, though. So
yeah, and it's out on the 11th of March. And I've got a button here that says pre-order now. And Deb won't be happy, but I'm getting it.
It's a good thing she doesn't listen to the podcast then, isn't it, Adam?
Well, I am getting a Blu-ray copy of The Full Monty.
Spearhead from Space.
The Full Monty for Mother's Day. Because in Great Britain, this Sunday, don't forget, listeners, don't forget your mums on Sunday. This Sunday is Mother's Day. Yeah, that's it.
You shouldn't forget them every day.
Who? Who am I not to forget?
Think about your mums every day.
Really?
Yeah.
Right, what else have we got coming up soon? Nothing really. It's different from last week. There's the image of the Fendal set, which has a Fendal and a little Leela. Latest products. Dalek.
I want the Genesis of the Dalek set, please.
You can buy it from whoone.co.uk. Dalek car air freshener, £2.99. Doctor Who magazine, 4.57.
What's that?
It's a Dalek car. If it's a Dalek's car, why a Dalek would need a car, I really don't know. But it's a Dalek car air freshener. Obviously, being a Dalek car would probably be quite smelly because Daleks apparently are quite smelly.
Is that Dalek Khan?
No, Dalek car. A car that a Dalek drives around in. Air freshener. It's quite clear. Dalek car air freshener.
Dalek Khan.
Khan.
Be quiet. There's a little model of Gwen from Merlin, I think. No.
I wonder what the Dalek car air freshener smells like.
I hope it doesn't smell of Daleks, otherwise it wouldn't be make your time.
Oh, did you see the fourth Doctor bobblehead?
I did, yes. I was just going to mention that, but you put me off because I was just scrolling down the list. It says Time Monster set with a Delgado Master and a great big computer from
that
the 1970s.
That from that episode.
I know, but it looks like... Oh, never mind. Yeah, so whoone.co.uk is where you can purchase such things.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
Yes,
that could
was.
Be who dot one blah, blah.
Hang on, I've got a sound effect for that.
Actually, it's www.whoone.co.uk.
No, it isn't. You do not
no,
need
I don't, you don't have
www.
To say
yeah, but you do. You can. You can't say
you
do not.
You can
use
say it.
It,
but if you go up there to the address bar and don't use the www, it still works.
It still works if you're using too.
Does it matter?
Yes. No.
Yes.
Right, next because week.
It doesn't matter.
While I'm here, and while I remember, what time are we recording next week? What day, in fact, are we recording next week?
Sunday,
thank you. So, month of Sunday.
Oh, excuse me, it will be Monday here, so.
The reason is that we would not have Mary at all if we recorded on Monday.
La 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 la. So we're recording on Sunday then.
correct mundo.
I only have me for a short period of time then, because I've got to get to school and leave early, so we'll see how long I have to be on. Pretty good. Give me that gun, Adam.
All right, okay. If you insist.
Oh, damn it. Out my shoulder.
I suggest a new strategy, Adam. Let the Wookiee win.
By the way, Robert, did you get the impression of you that happens to be on this this particular sound effect board?
Which one? I don't know what you mean.
Oh, it's another one here. you wouldn't have heard that because you coughed over it. Anyway,
it's another one as well.
It's another one. Oh, good grief! No, I've got that one here. Hang on.
That was you.
No, it's this one.
Yeah, that's you.
That's how I make them all.
There's been a new version of iTunes has been released.
Is that the one that I downloaded last week?
Yeah. The trouble is, it still doesn't help me out with the regards to going back to doing the charts, because it still jumps back two pages instead of going back the one page. So I still can't do the charts, unfortunately. But I can tell you that we at least were on page one of Doctor Who podcast. So if you did it as a chart for everything on file, well, 27 obviously that includes everything though. And Podshock's number one. Have they actually had a podcast out for a while? Let's have a look. I haven't listened to podcasts for a long time.
I was updating today and I didn't see
the last episode,
since December or something.
12th of December, and it was only 5 minutes.
Yep, see? Told you.
Yeah. And before that was October. Come on. That's Lewis Trapani.
How did they stay on top?
Probably through downloads. They wouldn't be on top of the charts if they haven't released an episode, but they're obviously, as far as listing on iTunes, they're top, because obviously over a long period of time they've probably had the most downloads, because Doctor Who podcast is two, then Radio Free Scotto, then another podcast that doesn't ever come out called Time Tales. When's that last one out? Oh, that was out of Christmas though. I did do them a bit of a disservice there. And then it jumps back two pages. I mean, it's ridiculous. Come on, iTunes. I like doing the charts, you know, but I'm not going to do something that takes a ridiculous length of time to do, because iTunes can't be bothered to have a proper search engine that works properly.
It should show one set of, you know, at least got an episode out fairly regularly.
Yeah. I'm just seeing who were... I noticed the Flashing Blade logo is virtually the same as the Memory Cheats logo. I don't know what's going on there. But at least we're above the Omega podcast, Adventures in Time, Space and Music. And
Omega.
They call it the Omega podcast on the Omega podcast.
I know.
Yeah.
Series.
I still say we're going to find out that the voice we heard in the TARDIS that was going Silence Will Fall was Omega.
I still think it was a Sontaran.
Sontaha.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's
it was the Valyard.
That's sort of about it for the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast this week.
Thank goodness.
Yes, I'm sorry, listeners, we do have to go.
I don't want to go.
But we.
I don't want to go.
But we will be back again next week.
Perhaps. Adam.
Yes.
Loves his son.
Adam.
Yes.
Adam.
Yes.
Adam. Adam.
Yes.
Just saying.
Nothing.
Anyway, right, so until next week, when we'll be discussing the victory of the Daleks, that's about it. Enjoy your Doctor Who for the next 6 days. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Right. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Shut up!
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APB Services production, sponsored by whoone.co.uk and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.